Well, thank you very much for coming today. I haven't given a talk here in a long time, but I'm glad to be back. A lot of wonderful memories about this place, and happy to be back. Thank you. So I'll just start off talking about Zen practice, and Zen practice is to wear awake here and now, without expectations of gain. But usually, when we start out in practice, we think of Zen practice being a technique to improve ourselves and attain states of peace, freedom, wisdom, enlightenment, awareness, and awakeness in the future. We think of it as a technique to improve ourselves and attain and get these particular states, but eventually it can be realized that our true nature is the Buddha nature. Peace, freedom, wisdom, enlightenment, awareness, awakeness are not states separate from us that we strive to get in the future. These are all here and now, right now. These are not things that we have to strive for in the future. We don't have to use practice as a technique to get them in the future. They're right now. Kariya Roshi used to emphasize very strongly, he used to say, "You are Buddha. All beings are Buddha." He used to emphasize this very frequently and emphasize it strongly. Suzuki Roshi, I'm sure you've heard of Suzuki Roshi from Tim talking about him, Suzuki Roshi was Tim's first teacher and the founder of San Francisco Zen Center and the author of the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, very wonderful teacher. He would sometimes say to his students, "When I look at you, I see you all as perfect Buddhas." And he'd go on to say, "I see you all as perfect Buddhas until you open your mouths to say something." It's very clear to Suzuki Roshi that our true nature was the Buddha nature, but it was also clear to him that we were ignorant of our true nature. So our true nature is the Buddha nature. Each being is Buddha in the sense that each being is a manifestation of Buddha nature. And Buddha nature is the awakeness, awareness, enlightenment, that is, or freedom, wisdom, that is being experienced here and now. This here now reality of awakeness is the true self, the true life, the true nature of each being. Each being is Buddha in the sense that each being is a manifestation of this here now reality of awakeness. So as I mentioned, awareness, awakeness, enlightenment, peace, freedom, and wisdom are not states separate from us that we strive to get in the future. Our practice is to fully live this here and now reality of awakeness and be the Buddhas that we truly are. When you hear the term Buddha, usually we'll think of the person who lived in India 2,500 years ago. And there was a person who lived in history named Shakyamuni Buddha. He was originally, his given name was Siddhartha Gautama. And he was a person who deeply realized, profoundly realized, that his what the seemingly separate individual that he seemed to be was a manifestation of this here now reality of awakeness. He saw that this is what he truly was, and he realized that all the seemingly separate beings and phenomena in the universe were also manifestations of this here now reality of awakeness. So the here now reality of awakeness is notes here. ultimately it's an undivided reality, but it manifests itself in such a way that it brings about the appearance of separation of self and other, and the appearance of a divided up reality. Ultimately, it's undivided, but it manifests, bringing about the appearance of a divided up reality. There seem to be all these separate individuals and things and events and situations. And we very deeply believe they are actually separate individuals, things, events, and situations. But in carefully investigating here now reality, it can be seen that these seemingly separate things and individuals are not actually separate individuals or things. This can be realized in our careful investigation of here-now reality. So the here-now reality of awakeness is a subjectless, objectless awakeness. It's boundless, all-inclusive, beginningless, and endless. It's a here-now reality of awakeness is wholeness or totality. There's nothing outside of it. There's nothing in relationship to it. Can't be objectified or explained, but yet it can't be hidden either. It's being experienced right now, and everything is a manifestation of it. Different terms are used to point to it. I'll just mention some of these different terms. Dharma, truth, thusness, true self, true nature, true life, supreme enlightenment, the one mind, the one Buddha mind, Buddha, Buddha nature, peace, liberation, perfect wisdom, and the life of all beings. These terms don't refer to separate states or separate things. These terms are all used to point to this here now reality of awakeness, which is being directly experienced now. So I'd like to read something from an essay I wrote. This is about 4 years ago. This is an essay I wrote for the Dharma Field newsletter. And I'll just say a little more about this. I might be able to make what I said more clear by reading this. Or maybe I'll make it more confusing. I'm not sure how it'll go, but we'll give it a shot anyway. So this here-now reality of awakeness cannot be objectified or conceptually grasped. Can't be objectified. We're not in a dualistic relationship to it. We're not a separate subject that sees it as a separate object. It can't be conceptually grasped, and that, you know, it's not something that could be packaged within a conceptual description or the limited conceptual model of how reality is. No matter how much we speak about it or write about it, it cannot be pinned down or objectified or explained or packaged into a conceptual description. Nevertheless, it is clear and evident. It is right here and now. And everything is a manifestation of it, so it can't be hidden. This can't, you can't hide from that. It can't hide from us. Whatever we see, hear, smell, taste, or touch is a manifestation of this reality of awakeness or Buddha nature. It can't be hidden. So this here-now reality of awakeness, which is clear and obvious, is usually ignored or overlooked. And ultimately, as I mentioned, reality is an undivided reality, but it manifests with the appearance of being a divided-up reality. And as I mentioned, we usually very much buy into the belief that it is a divided-up reality. And this reality is ignored by getting caught up in the belief in separation of self and others, and the belief in a dualistically structured reality. So usually we just believe this unquestioningly. It is a divided up reality. I am separate from others, and reality is divided up into all these separate categories and states and situations. We very much believe in a divided up appearance of reality and believe that's how it is. This here-now reality of awakeness is being ignored when we are caught up in these beliefs and respond and act based on these beliefs. We are profoundly taken in by these beliefs in many ways. We have many beliefs or assumptions about ourselves, others, and the nature of reality. And we live our lives based on these beliefs. This is the ignorance by which our Buddhahood is ignored. Though someone might hear that that ultimately reality is not divided up, and so they might reach for the idea of oneness to help explain reality to them. They think, well, if it's not separate, so it must be all one. But then here again, we're still in a subtle way caught up in the belief in separation of self and others. We're caught up in the idea of being a separate self who's holding to this idea of oneness. So even in the grasping of the idea of oneness or any idea at all which we take hold of and believe reality corresponds to it, any idea that we're holding on to, we're still caught up in this belief in a dualistically structured reality. There's still a subtle sense of believing that we're a separate ego self who's holding to these ideas. And there's, this is just another way of how we ignore this reality. So the very deep belief that reality corresponds to this dualistic appearance, that it is a dualistically structured reality. And this belief, we hold this belief so deeply, at such a deep level, and believe it so thoroughly that usually people don't realize that it is a belief. Someone might hear me say talking about separation of self and other, and saying that it's really a belief that that's how things are, and that I'd say, oh no, that's not a belief. That's how things really are. Then I might say to them, if I were a lawyer, I might say to them, I rest my case. Right? But I'm not a lawyer, so I wouldn't say that. If I were a lawyer, maybe I would say that. I don't know. Maybe lawyers don't say that, but I've seen lawyers on TV saying, I rest my case. So maybe the real lawyers actually do that. I don't know. We have many, many beliefs based on our assumption of a dualistically structured reality. And we don't try to get rid of beliefs. We don't try to get rid of the ignoring or ignorance. We don't try to get rid of the emotional responses, desires, and patterns of behavior based on this ignorance. Instead, just be aware of them. Just be aware. When it becomes evident that there's a belief in a dualistic structure of reality, and we're believing that reality corresponds to the one-sided limited views we have about it, just be aware at that point. Don't criticize yourself for having that belief. Don't try and get rid of the belief. Just be aware. Be awake right there. And in this practice of awareness and awakeness, the ways in which the true self or the here-now reality of awakeness is ignored can eventually be seen through, and they drop away by themselves. So this belief in separation of self and others can be seen through and let go of. It becomes clear in this practice of awareness and awakeness that reality could not correspond to this dualistic appearance. It couldn't couldn't be a dualistically divided up reality. This deep belief, which all of us have, can be seen through and let go of. I'm reading a lot of my lecture today. As I mentioned, the practice is to, the practice that we do, the practice of here now awareness and awakeness, is to fully live this here now reality of awakeness and awareness and live as the Buddhas that we are. And already this is going on. Already our true nature is a Buddha nature. Already we're living as manifestations of this Buddha nature, but it's usually ignored, overlooked. And as I mentioned, it's overlooked by buying into the belief that we are separate individuals living in a dualistically structured reality. And it's overlooked by believing that reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and views that we have about it. So when it becomes evident that these beliefs are operating, just be aware, be awake, here and now. No sense, you don't need to criticize yourself, say, oh, darn it all, there I go again. I'm believing in separation. I'm believing that reality corresponds to limited, one-sided ideas about how reality is. You don't have to criticize yourself. You don't have to try to get rid of those beliefs. Just be aware that those beliefs are operating. Not trying to get rid of anything. Just see that those beliefs are operating. And when it becomes evident that those beliefs are operating, just resume the practice of being awake here and now. Resume the practice of living as this reality of awakeness that is what we truly are. And resume the practice of living as the Buddhas that we are. In this practice of awakeness and awareness here and now, the beliefs by which here and now reality is ignored can be seen through and let go of. As I mentioned, the sense of separation drops away, and it can become clear that it is impossible for there to be a dualistically structured reality, or it's impossible for reality to correspond to some idea, some limited view that we have about it. But whether this sense of separation drops away or not, just be awake, be aware here and now. We don't have to get discouraged thinking, when is that dropping away going to happen? When is that belief in separation of self and other going to drop away? We don't have to worry about when it'll happen. Just be awake, be aware here and now. Continually resume that practice. Usually when we start out in practice, there's a belief, and we hear it's the practice of awareness, we usually have the idea, I should be aware, I should be aware. And then, so we see as I, as a separate individual, I'm doing something in particular called being aware, and I'm being aware of reality, which is, usually we assume is something separate from us, and then we're doing this with the expectation of getting some good reward in the future. So we're very much caught up in a dualistic understanding of reality when we practice in that way. I should be aware. I should, we see it in this divided up way. And we assume there's a separate ego self carrying out this practice. We're not really carrying out this practice. But when carrying out this practice, eventually it can be realized that the practice is to be this reality of awareness, awakeness. There's not a gap between ourselves and this reality. our practice isn't a technique to gain the state of Buddhahood, it's to be the Buddha that we are right now. This doesn't make much sense when you first hear this, I know that. So, most of us will practice with that, the idea, I should be aware, but just notice that that's going on. Don't criticize yourself for holding to the idea of a separate ego self carrying out this practice. Continually be aware, again and again. When this belief in separation of self and other arises, just resume that practice of being aware here and now. And eventually we can see what this practice is, the sense of being a separate ego self carrying out this practice, and be seen through and let go of. So our practice is to carry out this practice of living as the awareness and awakeness that we are endlessly. And all of us have these tendencies to see our life as a separate individual and see our life in dualistic relationship to others. All of us have this deeply rooted tendency to see our life in this way. It's not that you reach some point where that belief stops coming up. You know, it just whenever it does come up, just resume the practice of being aware here and now. Our practice is to live out of being this reality of awakeness and awareness. Live again and again, resume this practice of being awake and aware here and now without being caught by the idea of being some separate self who's doing it. If that idea comes up, just be aware at that point. Don't criticize yourself. Well, this is a practice of absolute intimacy. Our usual ideas of intimacy are where two separate beings become very close, and that's what we think of as being intimacy. This is the conventional idea of intimacy, but this practice is a practice of intimacy in which we fully live out this reality in which separation of self and other cannot be found. I'll just read a couple more things from this essay I wrote. So the true self, or here-now reality of awakeness, manifests itself in such a way as to bring about the appearance of separation of self and others, and the appearance of duration in time and extension in space. There seem to be separate beings, times, places, and events, to which names, labels, personal pronouns, and conceptual categories can be applied. In accordance with how things appear to be, and in accordance with conventional speech, we use names, labels, personal pronouns, and conceptual categories. We need to function and communicate in the conventional, seemingly dualistic world, where there seems to be separation of self and others, without being taken in by the belief that there actually is this separation. Then we can be truly helpful to ourselves and all the seemingly separate beings that we meet. In this practice of awakeness, it can eventually be seen that all beings are mutually assisting each other. These are not separate beings. If they actually were separate beings, this life of mutual assistance would not be possible. When this is clearly seen, a life of compassion, joy, and fearlessness opens up to us, and we can live as the great Buddhas that we are. So, anyway, I thought I'd say a little bit about my own experience with practice. When I started out in Zen practice, I thought that it was a technique to get something in the future. And I thought that it was about improving myself and trying to attain the states of wisdom, enlightenment, peace, and freedom. And when I first started out in Zen practice, I kind of had a honeymoon experience with it. I was so happy to have found a way of life that had meaning to me, and that I really had a great sense of joy in discovering Zen practice. And for a while, it seemed like I was just making wonderful improvements. I kept feeling happier and happier. I was having insights I'd never had before. And I was really grateful to have discovered this practice. And it seemed to me like making these wonderful improvements all very quickly, too. And I thought to myself, you know, I've only been doing this a few months, but you know, just think what I'll be like after 10 years. You know, my goodness. I mean, no telling how enlightened I'll be after 10 years. You know. So 10 years came and went, and now it's been almost 40 years. And if I'd known back then what it was going to be like now, I would have been very disappointed. But anyway, I had this feeling that I was making wonderful progress. It was just no telling how far I would go with this. After I'd been at San Francisco Zen Center, I practiced at the Berkeley Zen Center and the San Francisco Zen Center in California. And after I'd been there about 4 months, I put in an application to go to the San Francisco Zen Center's monastery at Tassajara. And I, on my application to go to the monastery, I wrote that I'd only been practicing for a few months, but already I was making remarkable improvements, I said. And the people who were looking over these applications, these were some of Suzuki Roshi's older students, and Suzuki Roshi always very strongly emphasized that practice should be carried out without gaining ideas. You know, practice should be done without expectations of gain. And here I'm talking about, you know, all the wonderful improvements I'd made. So the people who were evaluating the applications, they must have looked at my application and maybe said, oh my, this person is making remarkable improvements. Must have had a good chuckle out of that. And so, but they let me in anyway. So, and I used to have the idea, I cooked it up on my own, I never heard it from my teachers, but I used to have the idea that if I could sit zazen and not have a thought for 40 minutes, then I'd get enlightenment. The zazen prayers were 40 minutes, and I thought, if I could just go without having a thought for 40 minutes, I'd get enlightenment then. So sometimes when I'd be sitting zazen, my mind would get very calm and peaceful, and it would occur to me, I haven't had a thought in a long time. I said, enlightenment is probably just around the corner, just within my grasp, you know. I thought, oh no, I'm thinking again. Now I have to wait till next zazen period to get enlightened. my first sesshin that I went to, a meditation retreat, this was at the San Francisco Zen Center, and Katagiri Roshi was leading it. And this was still during my honeymoon period with Zen, and things were going very wonderfully. I was thinking to myself, boy, I'm taking to this zazen like a duck takes to water. My mind is becoming so peaceful, and I'm feeling so happy and having wonderful insights. And I was really feeling I was, you know, just doing remarkably well. And I thought to myself, you know, I bet enlightenment is just around the corner, just within my grasp. I bet that's how it goes. You know, that's going to go. Is I'm going to be enlightened any minute now. So I went in for a personal interview with Katagiri Roshi, and I felt I should let him know what was going on. And, you know, how well my practice was going, and I thought he would say, "You're experiencing this already during your first session? You are truly a remarkable Zen student, Norm." And I thought he'd say, "Keep applying yourself. Enlightenment is almost within your grasp. Maybe even within this session, you will attain it." Anyway, I thought he might say something like that, but he didn't. When I told him what was going on, he just said, "Oh, don't worry about it." And then he said, "How's your posture?" And then he said, "How's your breathing? How's your state of mind?" You know. Well, my posture wasn't so good. I was sitting on a chair. I went for many years without sitting on a chair, but as I've gotten older and my arthritis has gotten worse, here I am back on the chair again. So, but anyway, my posture was out of whack, you know, because I couldn't get lined up properly on the chair. And Kategori Roshi tried to help me get lined up on the chair so I had a proper posture. But he had a hard time doing that. I just didn't, you know, I couldn't seem to get lined up properly. And finally he looked at me and said, "Your legs are too long." So breathing was, you know, I may be a little bit excited, anticipating the enlightenment I'd be getting, and my state of mind, you know, I was all over the map thinking about the great enlightenment experience I was going to get. But he just brought me back. "How's your posture? How's your breathing? How's your state of mind? How is here now experience?" Don't sit there fantasizing about this wonderful enlightenment that will soon be within your grasp. Just pay attention, live fully here and now. You know, it's very helpful teaching to me, and it was. I think I started to appreciate what Zen practice is. Not about chasing after some wonderful state, but to fully live here and now. One time, Kategori Roshi was asked by a student. The student said to Kategori Roshi, "If I practice Zazen, will enlightenment come to me?" And Kategori Roshi said, "No. Even if you practice Zazen, enlightenment will never come to you." And then I never heard anybody ask Kategori Roshi this question, but somebody could have asked Kategori Roshi, "If I sit Zazen, will I get to enlightenment?" And Kategori Roshi could have replied, "No, even if you sit Zazen, you will never get to enlightenment, you know." You know, when we're thinking that enlightenment is something that we have to get to, or that it's going to come to us, you know, that we're ignoring the true enlightenment, which is right here and now. Fully living here and now is the true enlightenment. And in this practice, this can eventually be realized. So, a person might say, "I used to be an unenlightened person. I hated being unenlightened. But now, I'm an enlightened person, and I love being an enlightened person. It's really great. You know. And I live in mortal terror of falling back into that state of unenlightenment. That would just be awful." But Kategori Roshi, you know, used to talk about the person who was very proud that he attained enlightenment. And he took his hands, like somebody proudly putting his hands in his suspenders, and he'd twinkle his thumbs like this and he'd say, "I did it. I attained enlightenment." But so sometimes people will think that, you know, enlightenment will come to us if we just spend enough time on the cushion. You know, we sit Zazen long enough, eventually enlightenment will come to us. Doesn't matter what we do on the cushion, we can be, you know, fantasizing about getting revenge against our coworker who stabbed us in the back at work, I might be thinking about something that happened back in elementary school, or we might be anticipating an event that's coming up. You know, our high school reunion might be coming up, and we might be thinking, you know, I hope I attain enlightenment before my high school reunion. It would be so great if I could go to my high school reunion as an enlightened man. It would impress the heck out of people. So, there's one more story I was going to tell. This is about, this appeared in a comic book by R. Crumb. Some of you may be familiar with the cartoonist R. Crumb. Okay, and He wrote a story called Meatball. And I'll tell the story. And in this story, sometimes meatballs would fall out of the sky. And sometimes people would get hit on the head by a meatball. And after someone had been hit on the head by a meatball, there'd be a very interesting change in the person. Sometimes had a huge transformation. Sometimes they'd go from being complete jerks to people who were profoundly interested and devoted to benefiting all beings, and they spoke with wisdom and compassion, and were truly wonderful beings, you know, after they'd been hit on the head by the meatball. And so some people notice this, and they start thinking, you know, I'd really like to get hit on the head by a meatball too. You know, that'd be great. So large numbers of people began sitting outside waiting to get hit on the head by a meatball. And in the last caption of this story, R. Crumb shows a picture of all these people out in the field waiting to get hit on the head by a meatball. But underneath, R. Crumb writes, "Sorry, folks, meatball doesn't work that way." And anyway, and this, you know, I told this story, I don't know, maybe, 10 years ago. I told it here, and there was a person here who owned that original comic book of that R. Crumb had written, and he brought this comic book to me the next week, and apparently my version of it was different than R. Crumb's. But I like my version better. So anyway, I guess I was going to read something from here. So our practice is not about trying to get something or to improve ourselves, but to really live as we are, live as the Buddhas that we are, to express our Buddha nature here and now. See, it takes a while before we see what that means, but it's not about trying to get something in the future. It's to live as we are here and now. I recently was given a gift of two bookmarks, and these bookmarks were made by a company called Your True Nature Incorporated. Most corporations or incorporated entities are only secondarily concerned with expressing your true nature. But this one is, that's what they're all about. They want to help us express our true nature. And all beings are expressing their Buddha nature, their true nature, in their own unique way. And so they made some bookmarks telling us how two very wonderful beings express their true nature. And they're offering advice. This bookmark says, "Advice from a Moose." And it is, "Think big, spend time in the woods, eat plenty of greens, hold your head up high, and it's okay to be a little wild." That's advice from a moose about how to express our true nature. And then there's advice from a loon, the bird, our state bird, the loon. And this advice is spend time at the lake, enjoy a good swim, surround yourself with beauty, and dive into life. This is advice from two wonderful beings about how to express their true nature. So I thought I would share that with you. I thought they were a lot funnier than you guys did. So. Well, any questions about, or comments, anything? Yes.
You mentioned a couple times during your talk about how the one true reality manifests itself as separate.
Seems like it's a divided up reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would it?
I don't know. Even Buddha doesn't know that. It's just all we can say is just look and you'll see us that way. But yeah, we can't pin down why, but we can definitely see that's how things are going on. So. Yes.
What do you make of experiences that somebody might have on the cushion? You know, people describe lots of different sort of ethereal types of revelations, and mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to just sit here staring at a wall when you think about other people who have had those sorts of things, or view yourself
right.
and
yeah.
you know, had an experience. I don't want to get back to that. So mm-hmm. What advice do you have for coping with that?
Just be aware whenever they come up. Be aware. Yeah. Don't latch on to them saying, well, I'm really making some real progress in my practice now. Right? You don't have to hold to that idea. Or, I did it. I attended. Just be aware. Continually resume the practice of awareness. Those experiences come up. All kinds of experiences come up. And sometimes teachers will talk about a person attaining enlightenment. And it's, you know, it's a misleading expression, but yet Katagiri Roshis talk about that. Different Zen teachers talk about a person attaining enlightenment. But they're just speaking about this experience in terms of conventional understanding and conventional appearances. There never has been a separate person who has attained some particular separate state of enlightenment. You know, the belief structure which would, you know, that drops away. The belief structure of the separate me and I, separate me, attained that particular separate state called enlightenment. When teachers talk about that, you know, they're just talking in terms of conventional appearances and in terms of conventional speech. Things like that occur. No. But they're not occurring to a particular separate person. It's just there's this experience, but this experience is a manifestation of here and now reality. It's a manifestation of the true Buddha nature, true enlightenment, true wisdom, true peace, liberation is right now. Manifesting as it looks like there's a separate person there having this experience. You know, so, but people can get very caught by this when they hear, yes, they hear about other people's enlightenment experiences, and you get very caught by that. And Katagiri Roshi used to talk about sizes of enlightenment, you know. You know, because this appearance, this manifestation that takes place, where there seems to be a separate individual attaining some particular state called enlightenment, this experience shows up in various depths and magnitudes. So Katagiri Roshi used to talk about the sizes of enlightenment, you know. And he would say, well, there's tiny enlightenment and little enlightenment and average size enlightenment and a little bit bigger than average size enlightenment and big enlightenment, huge enlightenment, and then his eyes would get real big and his and monstrous enlightenment. And then you can go the other direction too. You know, you could say there's, mini enlightenment, micro mini enlightenment, and subatomic sized enlightenment. You know, it shows up in different ways. But, so it's not something to get infatuated with. Maybe thinking, I had a really monstrous enlightenment. And it's not necessary to lord it over somebody else who's only had a micro-mini enlightenment or a subatomic-sized enlightenment. It's all just manifestation of the true enlightenment, which is what our life is. So it's not necessary to get infatuated by these sizes of enlightenment which show up. We don't need to become jealous if we hear that our friend had a monstrous enlightenment and all we've been able to manage is a tiny enlightenment. We don't need to become jealous and think it's not fair. I've been practicing longer than him. How come he gets to have the monstrous enlightenment? Anyway, I hope I haven't beclouded the matter too much. Is that okay? All right. Yeah. Good question. So anything else? Any other?
Welcome.
Yes.
Occurred to me how often I fall into the trap of thinking of meditation or awareness as purely a mental process.
Mm-hmm.
And I do notice all the levels that I can do that.
Sure.
But that how essential, I guess, it is that we're still physical beings. We're not enlightened people aren't physical beings walking around with enlightenment inside. They're probably the other way, completely the other way around. I don't know if you can say more about that.
Yeah, it very much seems like we're particular separate beings who are doing something called being aware. That very much seems that, and we don't deny that appearance. And for a long time, practice will go on in that way. You know, that's not something wrong. But eventually, it can be seen that actually not a separate individual there. It's not some particular state of awakeness or enlightenment to get that belief in the divided up reality, it just falls away. So enlightenment is not something to get. And our practice isn't about trying to get rid of anything or get anything. It's just to see clearly. Just continually be aware of what our experience is here and now. But our tendency to lose ourselves in our ideas about how things are and falling into our beliefs about who we are and who others are is so deeply rooted. And in our practice, we get a chance to thoroughly familiarize ourselves with how deeply rooted this disbelief is. Did you want to ask more about that?
No.
Okay, all right. I want to caution you not to believe anything I say, because whatever is said, you can't really say it. You know, everything that is said is just a pointer. You know, and so don't grasp what I say. And Norm said it; it must be true. I'm going to believe that. Very bad idea. Just see it as a pointer, and that's my advice to you. And anyway, if there are no more questions, I guess I'll end my talk. And thank you very much for coming today. I've enjoyed talking to you. It's been a long time since I've been here, so good to come back. So, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.